Hello, my friends. Welcome to the Hello Tomorrow podcast, where we make sense of what's next in 15 minutes every week. I'm your host, Josh Allen Dykstra. As always, I'm going to do my best to cut through the noise and expose the systems that are secretly shaping our future. Our goal is to leave here with more clarity and a little bit of optimistic rebellion. Today's episode will probably be a little longer as well, because we've got another big topic to address, which is, what in the world would we do if we didn't do capitalism? A month ago, I did my best to convince you that capitalism is a fundamentally unsuitable belief system. If we collectively want to do things like, you know, have a functioning planet, ensure humanity survives as a species, and so on. The crux of the whole episode was this. All isms tell you what they most value right there in their name. So, the thing capitalism values most is capital. Capitalism exists to serve those who already have capital and to make them more capital. This is its prime directive. Everything else is just not incentivized. Because of this, capitalism is a belief system that's fundamentally incapable of meeting any kind of needs that aren't aligned with the making of more capital. This is why the best and easiest way to make money is with money. Why trees and whales are valuable when they're dead, but not when they're alive. And why the US healthcare, heavy air quotes, system completely, ruthlessly sucks. It's also why capitalism will be unable to solve climate change, eliminate poverty, eradicate disease, or stop that world-ending comet headed for Earth. That last one was from a movie called Don't Look Up. You should see it. Now, if you're not on board with all of this, I invite you to listen to episode 11. But if you're now curious what we might do instead of capitalism, you're in the right spot. All right, two quick disclaimers before we get into it. One, this is primarily about my friends here in the US. I want desperately to figure out a way for us to move boldly into a better future here. So, friends from other countries, please share your ideas. I know some of your countries already do these things quite well. That's the first one. Second one, I'm not walking into this episode pretending I have some perfectly polished blueprint. I do think I've got the basic shape of what needs to come next for the US directionally correct, but I'm inviting you into this as a discussion. Please consider this an invitation. We will need to crowdsource what comes next. And what I am convinced of is that a whole lot of us are done pretending that what we've got now is the best we can do. I think we're ready to imagine and design something better. All right, let's go. I want to start with a few of the biggest questions about replacing capitalism. Like you, I imagine, I come from an entire lifetime of swimming only in the waters of capitalism. It's all I've ever known from the moment I was born. This is almost certainly true for you too. And I can tell you from personal experience, belief systems are tricky things to deconstruct. Why? Because, well, they form the foundations of our beliefs. Questioning those things is going to make your whole reality feel shaky for a while. Sometimes we even freak out a little. That is completely, absolutely normal. Maybe just expect it? Now, knowing that feeling's coming isn't going to make it not arrive, but it will give you a different kind of thing to hold on to. Think of it like a summer storm. The shakiness will pass, I promise. Okay, let's get into what I call the four big freakouts about replacing capitalism. First question, but what about the free market? What about the free market? Ah, the free market. Like you, perhaps, I was taught my whole life that there's a free market out there. And if we pesky kids would just, you know, not muck it up, some sort of gentlemanly invisible hand would guide us all toward prosperity. It's a lovely idea. It is. But my friends, the free market is about as real as unicorns doing Pilates. Robert Reich lays this out beautifully in his book, The System. Markets aren't free, they're built. designed, structured, curated. They're held up by laws and courts, zoning, subsidies, contracts, tax codes, and the culture that continues to believe in them. We have this fantasy that the market is some kind of emergent, benevolent, biological entity. It is not. The market was made by humans, and it is controlled by humans with capital. And the story that it is somehow not made and controlled by humans was also, you guessed it, made up by humans with capital. Put another way, the market is like a terrarium. People just like you or me, but with capital, chose the temperature, humidity, soil, plants, predators, and prey. There's no such thing as a free market. A better question is the market we have free for anyone? Right now, the market only feels free for the holders of capital. You know this. If you've got money, you're fine. If you don't, you struggle every day of your life. So, free market, not really a thing. But freedom, that's a real thing. And it's important because we all want it. So let's talk about that. The next freakout is, question two, wouldn't moving beyond capitalism take away individual agency and personal freedom? Totally legitimate freakout. We care about freedom and choice and liberty. I'm an Enneagram 8, which, if you know about this, means one of my core fears is being controlled by others. True story. But let's check in on the agency and freedom we actually have right now. We have the freedom to spend 40 years doing work that sucks the life out of us because we got to pay the rent. We have the freedom to go bankrupt due to medical bills. We have the freedom to work on whatever capital wants us to work on, and absolutely nothing it doesn't. What do I mean by that last one? Well, let's imagine an economy that builds the things most of us want, like walkable neighborhoods, arts, community spaces, childcare, parks, elder care, etc. This sounds nice, right? Too bad. Capital doesn't like that shit. It's not a good investment. So it doesn't get built. Individual agency under capitalism is basically Henry Ford's famous line. You can choose any color car you want, as long as it's black. That's agency inside of capitalism, y'all. Feel free to choose anything you want as long as it maximizes shareholder value. Yes, I know we will need to show that the next thing will provide agency and freedom. But first, I want us to see that the bar for freedom is much lower than we think. We don't have very much freedom and agency now. We live in a political democracy, and we have our say in how our country is run, right? Why shouldn't we also have a say in what we get to build and create with our work? That leads us to question three. Let's talk a little more about work. All right, question three. Won't replacing capitalism make everything inefficient and bureaucratic? Now, this was a deep belief system for me to deconstruct. I had this understanding that the only alternative to capitalism was government. And government is inefficient and mostly terrible because, well, I've personally interacted with the California DMV, and I'm here to tell you, it really is run by the sloths of Zootopia. At least it used to be. I've been gone a long time. But I admittedly had some baggage to work through on this point. But as I did the research for this episode, I had a bit of an epiphany. I now think my perception of government inefficiency is what it is because of something we might call generational trauma. Now, to deeply understand what I'm about to say, you have to listen to episode 13 about the fourth turning. Okay? I was born in 1981, so my entire life has been lived during a third and now fourth turning. These are eras that are always defined by institutional decay, polarization, and government dysfunction. So if you buy into this theory of turnings, which you know I do, I've literally never been alive during a time when government was actually working. So that means when I think government, my mind conjures that DMV waiting room and also stories of bridges that collapse because they weren't fixed, and high-speed rail lines that can't get frickin' built, and a completely, almost comically, inept Congress. Maybe you feel all of that too. But as I look deeper at government, I'm pretty sure this wasn't always the case. It's just the era we've been in for the last four decades. So if we look backward to the time before I was born, during the first and second turnings of just this last cycle, government was quite extraordinary. All around us, we see evidence of the massive, impressive systems that were built then, but still exist today. Things like the internet, the interstate highway system, public university expansion, social security, and rural electrification, giant public works like Hoover Dam, NASA putting humans on the freaking moon with less computing power than your phone's calculator, right? So if we expand our view to something larger than my lifetime, we can clearly see that government can be wildly competent. Many of us just haven't lived through that version of government. Now, this is the challenge with turnings. By the time the cycle comes around again, most of the humans that lived through the last one have passed on. Now, I'll also point out that this era that I'm pointing to, coming out of the Great Depression and World War II and the 30 to 40 years after, that's largely what collective nostalgia now seems to refer to as the good old days. Now, let me be clear. Those times were absolutely not good for everyone, and I don't want us to go back there. I'm just saying that it's a time period that is widely regarded as stable and functional in the civic sphere. We built public things that we were proud of, and we had a kind of communal stability to show for it. Now, meanwhile, in today's era, capitalism has some pretty great PR to convince us of its incomparable efficiency. But it can actually be wildly inefficient and deeply bureaucratic. Consider health insurance billing labyrinths. You ever been stuck in one of those? I bet you have. Actually, all insurance paperwork processes are basically hellscapes, like truly representing every flaming circle of hell for me. HR policies, thicker than Tolkien novels, right? With language, it feels just about as made up. Private energy utilities that collapse in bad weather. Here's looking at you, Texas. Legalese that's completely impregnable without a Harvard law degree. All this bureaucracy, that's not coming from the government, my friends. That's driven by capitalism. So capitalism isn't across the board efficient. It's just very efficient in the things that make more capital. And it's deeply, often torturously, inefficient in the ways that don't or won't make more capital. Now, conversely, government isn't across the board inefficient. It can and has accomplished amazing things. So it's not government incapable and private market incredible. A better question is, are we actually producing the kind of things we want? Right? Are we getting to work on the things we want? Are we making the kind of world we want? Right now, I believe most of us answer no to those questions. All right, let's do one more of these freakouts. You ready? Question four. But won't innovation die without capitalism? This is capitalism's favorite bedtime story. Without capitalism, the iPhone wouldn't exist. I'm calling it bullshit. Innovation comes from human curiosity, not from corporations. Also, historically, a tremendous amount of innovation springs from the patient, long-term, civic-funded research we talked about in episode 9. Things like universities, government labs, collective research, openly explored science. And then what happens, many decades later, is that capital shows up to slap a logo on it and then sell that innovation back to you. So the bedtime story is actually, without a strong public investment, the iPhone would never be able to exist. Now, that's somehow less sexy than the tech bro savior of the world in hoodie persona, but it's much more true. Humans have been innovating for thousands of years. Without capitalism, we're not gonna forget how. All right, those are the big four freakouts I've been working through. If you have another we should discuss in a future episode, send me a note at future@hellotomorrowpodcast.com. But now let's talk about what do we do instead? If we're not going to do that, what are we going to do? All right. Have I told you that I'm working on a new book? I'll be sharing a lot more about this in the new year. I am incredibly excited about it. And starting in January, I'm going to take you on the journey with me as I go from idea all the way to book in your hand. It's going to be fun. All right. But I mentioned the book here because the question of what do we do instead is admittedly a very big topic. And it's what the last half of the book, I'm pretty sure, will be about. That said, I'm going to give you a preview of what I'm thinking so far. Ready? Here's the crux of it. We don't replace capitalism with one big new system. We build a second economy, which I call the commons, that will live in parallel to the capital-based economy, which I call the market. All right, let me explain these two economies. Let's talk about the commons. If a thing is required for life, it should not be for profit. I mentioned a phrase like this in episode 9 as well. Now, this is basically the guiding mantra for what goes in the economy of the commons. The commons is where we put everything required for a good life in the modern world. Things like clean water, food, healthcare and essential medicines, housing, childcare, energy to power the place that you live, high-speed internet access, which some will need for work, mobility, which some will need to get to work, like public transit, education, emergency services. This isn't meant to be a comprehensive list, but you get the idea. If you literally can't live a good, healthy, modern life without it, and or if the future is better if we all have access to it, it belongs in the commons. Inside the commons, everything gets governed by principles we might best call economic democracy. I hinted at this idea earlier in the episode when I said, shouldn't you have a say in what you get to build and create with your work? Right now, almost no one has any say in what they work on, unless they're born with some kind of privilege that allows them to get there. Most of us are stuck in workplace situations where we have very little control. You don't vote on business strategy. You don't direct resources. You don't choose what gets built. Think about it. You're basically a subcontractor to someone else's, I'm a billionaire, desires. Economic democracy fixes that inside the commons. It says, if your life runs on it, if your kids depend on it, if your future is chained to it, you should have a say in how it works. In the commons, people don't just consume essential resources. We co-govern them. We choose how surplus gets spent. We help decide what gets built. We get an actual vote in the shape of our economic future. This doesn't mean chaos. It means distributed power, shared stewardship, and institutions that actually answer to the people they serve. If this feels foreign in the world of work to you, yeah, I get it. This is definitely not the norm right now. I'm going to share more examples down the road that get into the details of how the commons will function. But hopefully for now, you get the idea. You can see how powerful it would be and just how much sense it makes. Just remember this. You get a say in how your country is run. Why shouldn't you get a say in what kind of work you spend your life doing? The commons is the new economy we must build in the coming spring season. All right, now let's talk about the market. The market is basically what we have now, just with fewer things in it. And in my view, we simply let the market keep doing markety things. Seriously, let it run wild in all the places where the future isn't on the line. This is the home for cool gadgets and quirky tech and bougie restaurants and niche products and $19 craft cocktails with mysterious smoke and artisan socks and weird snacks at Trader Joe's, right? Like, this is all the fun, spicy, experimental things that make life even more interesting and exciting. There's absolutely still a place for this stuff. And capitalism, it actually shines here. The market's phenomenal at novelty and creativity, variety, entertainment, and convenience, and making life weird in delightful ways. The market will handle all the stuff we don't need, but makes life fun, flavorful, and surprisingly. Keep that weird shit coming, market. It's good. We let the market compete, disrupt, meme itself into oblivion if it wants to. All that's good and fine and fun, as long as it's not happening in the domains where human lives or our collective future depends on it. Capitalism is terrific at making dessert. It's a freaking disaster at making dinner. All right. That's the idea for what comes next. Two parallel economies. One for the things we need, the commons. One for the things we want, the market. I'll explain more in future episodes and in the book why this solution isn't just elegant and easy to understand, but it's actually going to make both economies better. Now, maybe one day we'll figure out how to live in a world without capitalism entirely. I can imagine that future somewhere out there, but right now, I'm much more interested in building the way out, the exit ramp. I believe this parallel structure is that path. It'll make the current system optional instead of inevitable. So, what do we need to do right now? We don't need to overthrow capitalism this afternoon, right? We just need to start seeing clearly what it is doing. Here's my favorite rebel practice to help us build that kind of eyesight. Ready? I call it the requirement scan. Right? The requirement scan. Once a day, just ask, is this thing required for life? If it is, the next question will almost certainly be, then why is someone allowed to profit off of it? Healthcare, housing, childcare, medicine, safety, food. Just noticing all the necessities of life that have been privatized to make someone, not you, but someone, a lot of money, is an act of rebellion that cracks the spell. Capitalism isn't oxygen. It's not gravity. It's not an irreducible element or an immutable law of nature, and it's not the peak of human imagination either. It's just the current chapter, and this chapter is getting tired. Now, what comes next isn't a single system. It's two economies running side by side. This unleashes a world where survival isn't a product. It's a place where the future can be a shared asset. It's a place where the market will actually have to compete for the privilege of employing us. This is a future where work gets better, where life gets saner, and tomorrow feels like something we actually want to walk toward. The truth is, we're not waiting for that world. We are already building it. One tiny act of optimistic rebellion at a time. If this helped you see things more clearly, please share it with just one person you think should hear it. If I can help your group or organization make sense of what's next, shoot me a message anytime, future@hellotomorrowpodcast.com. Thanks for listening. See you next week.